Press Conference, USA. From Washington, the Voice of America brings you Press Conference, USA, an unrehearsed discussion program. Each week at this time, reporters interview an interesting personality in the news. To introduce our guest of the week and the news correspondents, here is Rhett Turner, this week's moderator of Press Conference, USA.
Our guest today is a personality who is probably one of the best-known people on Earth. He's the commander of the historic Apollo 11 flight to the moon, the first man to set foot upon the moon, astronaut Neil Armstrong. It was 1 year ago, on July 20th, that Apollo 11 touched down on Tranquility Base, and Armstrong radioed back that the Eagle has landed. Just before midnight, United States time, Armstrong stepped out of the lunar module onto the surface, and for the first time in history, man moved from his Earth to another celestial body. The implications are enormous, and today we want to talk with Neil Armstrong about those implications and look back a year later at the event. Armstrong is one of 50 United States astronauts chosen from the ranks of test pilots and scientists. He is 39, was born in the Midwestern state of Ohio, and before becoming an astronaut in 1962, was a noted test pilot with the Aeronautics and Space Agency. He has been a part of NASA, as a matter of fact, for 15 years, and has flown and tested our most sophisticated aircraft, as well as those Gemini and Apollo spacecraft missions about which we know. This month, Neil Armstrong assumes a new role as Chief of Aeronautical Research Programs in the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, and we'd like to talk with him about that, too. So, Neil, welcome to Press Conference USA.
Thank you, Red. It's nice to be here and a pleasure to have this opportunity to talk to the many new friends I have around the world as a result of my recent visits.
And now may I ask our news correspondents to identify themselves.
Everett Clark, Newsweek Magazine.
I'm Russ Mark of the Daily Express of London.
John Lennon, the Washington Evening Star.
For our first question, let's turn to you, Mr. Clark.
Neil, since the landing last year, there's been another lunar landing and another attempt to fly there. But an awful lot of the attention is shifting back toward the Earth and toward Earth orbiting stations that someday will be manned and will have a shuttlecraft to carry men back and forth to them. Do you feel that the manned exploration of the solar system will sort of end with the moon and concentrate now on just the moon and the Earth, or do you think we'll go farther than that?
No, Ev, I think we're seeing the beginning of what is normally a typical reaction to new developments, particularly new developments in transportation systems. Initially, you have exploratory voyages, and you develop the beginning of a new transportation system to a new land. And immediately upon developing such a capability, you soon find that people want to use it. And that's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing that people in a variety of fields want to make the space program a useful program, that is, one that can benefit peoples around the world, bring them closer together by means of communication, by means of improved weather prediction, by ultimately controlling the weather itself to avoid disasters, a interest in understanding the nature of the Earth itself, and this really is just finding a use for our space technology. Now, at the same time, there are going to be additional exploratory efforts. We'll eventually understand more and more of the universe around us, and hopefully within our lifetime, we'll have a reasonably good understanding of all the elements of our solar system, all our nearby planets. However, it will, of course, be true if the space program is, in fact, a transportation system that's here to stay, that this exploratory percentage will become smaller and smaller, and the useful product percentage become larger and larger.
Mr. Mark.
You've been around the world since you returned to us mere mortals on a goodwill mission, and there's been a lot of talk about the cost of space and the overlapping effort, for instance, with the Soviet Union and the United States particularly. And you're in the Soviet Union, you saw a Soyuz go off into space. And I was wondering if you'd discuss with us the prospects for international cooperation in terms of space exploration and in this field of using space around the Earth.
Well, certainly space exploration is a costly business. It's under some criticism, of course, because of these costs, which are competing with other programs who would like to use those funds. But transportation systems have always been costly. At the time that Christopher Columbus started his voyages, the fable is that Queen Isabella had to pawn her jewels in order to provide the funds for the exploration. Now, I'm not sure whether that's a true fact or not, but it does indicate that it was costly in terms of the resources available to the people supporting those programs at that time. As a matter of interest, the development of the railroad system here in this country, in the United States, in the early 1800s, is approximately the same cost in real dollars as the cost of the space program. And so we see the development of that transportation
system. In real
system.
Dollars or in percentage of the economy at that
no,
time?
No, in real dollars.
In real dollars?
Yes.
That real, made billions?
Yes. Real dollars, the development of the rail system, the building of the rail system across the country was about the same order of magnitude.
You have good historical basis on which to develop this theme about the future of space as a transportation system then.
Well, I think that we can always learn a great deal from history, and we find that a lot of things have been done in years gone by, and mistakes have been made, and it's important to look back and avoid those mistakes. I recall that we made an investment not quite that large in about a little bit larger, same time frame in transportation system that completely fell on its face, was not successful at all. That was the canal system of the United States, which the latter part of the 19th century, which was a very large expenditure. And because the program wasn't sufficiently understood at the time of the investment, why it was not successful. And of course, we wouldn't want the space program to become another canal system. We would rather have it become a successful transportation system, but it's going to take our combined efforts to make sure that that's a fact. Now, these growing costs do make an international approach to this exploration and service a very attractive one, one in which these high costs can be shared among nations and among those many peoples who will benefit from services that eventually we would hope this system would be able to provide. And in our program are very much dedicated to improving and increasing not only cooperation but collaborative efforts between all the current space powers, in addition the remainder of the countries as well, because to one degree or another everyone has the ability to participate to the limit of their knowledge and resources. And I would hope that we'll see this to be a growing thing. The head of the administration, Dr. Payne, has recently been visiting a number of countries around the world with an objective of enlisting their support in a very direct sort of way. And I would hope that the space shuttle program, which is specifically designed to take things into orbit and retrieve them from orbit at low cost, will be a program in which a large number of countries will participate actively.
John Lennon?
We've all heard you mention at one time or another what you refer to as the spirit of Apollo. And just looking at it from the point of view of a man who's been a long distance away and had a good chance to look back, We also get a sort of an impression, or did recently, that you are sort of disappointed that the so-called spirit of Apollo didn't really catch on as well as you might have hoped. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yes. I think the spirit of Apollo has caught on. I've seen evidence of it in countries around the world. People do believe that we can take big problems and get together, work together to solve those problems. However, the disappointment that I've seen is because so many individuals, groups, and factions and countries, in a more or less normal sense, have been rather overwhelmed by today's problems. The difficulty of realizing a problem once it exists is that you are already too late to provide a really effective solution.
Too deep into its ramifications?
Well, what I mean to imply is that it's always difficult. It's more difficult to fix a house than it is to build it right in the first place. Consequently, when you have a cracking wall, it's a more expensive process to fix that wall than it would have been to buy a better grade of mortar in the first place.
Well, in a practical sense, do you mean that perhaps we should sort of learn to live with a few of our immediate problems and begin now to focus in on those problems that we know are going to come up and begin now to plan for and work out solutions before they hit us between the eyes?
In a sense, that's the approach. Certainly, we can't just live with today's problems. We always have to recognize they exist and spend a really substantial amount of effort in rectifying those problems in the best possible way. But I believe that a larger percentage of our thought processes and investment should be directed toward solving the problems that are going to occur in the coming years and thence avert them ever becoming really serious.
Well, how do you, as a spokesman of the technology of the space age, how do you think technology can be applied to our social problems? Have you any ideas on that? Like, well, obviously the problems in the cities, the urban renewal and that sort of thing, the house with the crack. Have you any other specific ideas in mind that you think space age technology and methods can be applied to specifically?
Well, I believe that the terrible catastrophe in Peru,
the earthquake
in Peru recently, was created a serious catastrophic social problem, one in which technology could have provided a significant improvement if we would just had the resources to do it. If a satellite, an applications technology satellite type of device, had been on station over Peru during that time period, we certainly would have had an immediate appraisal of the damage and the extent of the catastrophe that could have been used quickly to plan the activities that would be designed to alleviate the situation down there. We didn't have such a device, unfortunately, and of course the planning took a long time, and even now there are certainly a very large number of homeless and starving people in that area. Mm-hmm. So one simple example, I would hope that our understanding of the technology, of the forces of nature in particular, of weather, earthquakes, and those things will develop in the coming decade to the extent that we can even prevent major social catastrophes from occurring. Mm-hmm.
Well, Neil, we'll have more questions for Neil in just a moment. This is Press Conference USA, the weekly Voice of America discussion program. Our guest is astronaut Neil Armstrong, the first man to walk on the moon. Questioning him are Everett Clark of Newsweek magazine, Ross Mark of the London Daily Express, and John Lannan of the Washington Star. More questions, Mr. Clark.
Neil, I'd like to follow up that Peru earthquake example. It seems to me that maybe, even though we have a lot of the technology now, we have the ATS satellite, we don't have yet early warning systems for earthquakes, although there's a lot of work going into that. It seems to me maybe there would still be an organization gap, or whatever you might call it. How might all these newer benefits that technology makes possible be organized and put to use? For example, do you see any need for the United Nations or any organization like that to sort of be an international clearinghouse for technology to let the world understand what is available and then find some way to help governments put these things that are available into use? I think we have a lot of things lying around that are unused at the moment.
That's certainly a good point. Yeah. And I'm not certain what agencies should be involved in the approach to these kinds of problems, but our biggest problem is not the technology itself, as you point out, but the transfer of not just technology, but information of all sorts. So the processing of information and making it available to the people at the place where it's needed is a problem that we all share. People in our industry, people in the popular press, people in libraries and in government agencies. And I would certainly advocate any efforts that might be made in the line of finding ways, both national and international, to make more information available to more people at the time when they need that information.
Well, hasn't this been one of the major thrusts and contributions of the space agency? We talk about spin-off, but a good deal of it gets into the high technology area. But this is one of the areas where data accumulation and dissemination has really played a vital role in the entire space program. I'm just suggesting that perhaps the adaptation of this sort of data handling and information processing might very well fit into this management concept that Ev brings up. Would you agree?
I would agree with that, John. Within our agency, we're doing certain things along those lines. For example, we have a safety institute whose fundamental job is acquiring data that is useful to people in a wide variety of fields about safety, and having that information retrievable on very short notice, finding ways of coding information such that it is available on a timely basis, and a method of getting at it. I suspect that other agencies in this country and in many countries are trying similar things in various areas where information is needed on a fast retrieval basis. And I suppose what needs to be further concentrated is those systems which will allow international retrieval of such information.
Ross Mark?
One of the questions I'm always asked when I get back from the Cape is, when will an American woman go into space? And now that we're getting to a point of space laboratories where you have multiple persons up there, and we know that there are some tasks women are usually better at on Earth than men. Do you foresee women going up into space now in an American spacecraft?
Yes, I certainly do, Ross. As a matter of interest, we have no prohibition against women at this time. We just have had none that qualified within a set of requirements that had been established. In the next decade, I think we'll see very much larger number of disciplines being involved in these various products of the space transportation system that we were discussing earlier. And within that context, we will see, I think, women as well as men, and of course a wide variety of scientific and technical disciplines being included as not only crew members, but passengers and visiting scientists and so on.
Do you think women's lib is going to last that long?
The thrust of your remarks certainly seems to indicate, in your opinion, that we're heading into the applications decade now in space. This being the first anniversary of your lunar landing, may we ask you just a personal question or two about reflections back on the landing itself and a year later?
Well, it's been a very busy year for me, a year in which
we're well aware
I've
of
done,
that.
Done a wide variety of new things. The opportunity to, I should say, first started in quarantine, which was new to me, and later traveling around our own country and then traveling around the world, reporting on the results of initial results of the Apollo program. And since that time, being involved in the difficulties with the Apollo 13. And
you were a part of the investigations board.
As part of the investigations board on the Apollo 13 accident. Then a trip to Soviet Union. And now, in my new position, working with the aeronautics research program of this country. So it's been a very busy year for me. It hasn't allowed me a great deal of time to reflect on 1 year ago, but if I look at my watch any time during this time period, I'm certainly reminded of the things I was doing just exactly 1 year ago
time
during the flight of Apollo 11. And I find that I can remember those events very well. I can remember a great many more details of little things that happened than I might have guessed. I think I'll always relish the recollection of that flight, because in addition to the fact that it was a successful flight from the point of view of meeting its objectives, it also was a very happy flight, and we enjoyed, as we the crew, I can't speak for the people on the ground because I couldn't watch them firsthand, but those people that I could watch, Buzz Aldrin, Mike Collins, and myself, were enjoying every minute of the flight.
Well, the four of us sitting here with you were certainly anxiously watching and waiting and listening out there in Houston. Neil, you know, this is another interesting point, is all of you astronauts, I hate to call you an ex-astronaut, but all of you, primarily engineers and scientists, and the space program has made you all become many more things. You've become goodwill ambassadors, you've become many of you moving into other executive positions. I guess that's the inexorable march of time taking its toll in it. Do you think that all of the guys are going to adapt into this sort of life as they move on?
Well, I would hope that it's a very useful thing, that those few of us who have gone on to do other jobs will carry with us the best things that have been learned from this extensive investment in the increase in technology, and carry it into other areas, the best parts, and find places where those contributions can be usefully utilized. And so I have great hopes that that will be the case. Only history will tell.
John?
From your point of view, what are those best parts that you're carrying out of an astronaut program, which was really very, very narrowly focused, into what is a far, far broader field, which is basic aeronautics, which is really what you're getting into now? I'm sure there are carryovers, but really, what are they? Can you lay them out a little?
Well, there are many details that are important, techniques that were devised, both engineering techniques, scientific approaches, and management kinds of techniques that will be applicable in other areas. But I think the thing that is most easily carried into a large number of completely different fields is the basic spirit of Apollo itself. That is, you establish a goal that everyone agrees is a desirable goal, and everyone can understand. Now, it's very important that everyone that's working on a program understand what the objective was. And of course, that was the wonderful, clear advantage that Apollo had. It wanted to put a man on the moon before the end of the decade, and everyone could understand the goal.
Well, you were on dead center of the most focused effort in man's history, really, there.
Yeah.
This is what you're referring to, is your own recollection of this massive focus.
Yes. That's true, but I find it applies in a variety of fields. Just this morning in my own office, I found during the discussion of an aeronautical program that no one could, in fact, define what the goal was that we were trying to do. And everyone had a different idea of what they were ultimately attempting to achieve. And consequently, it's very difficult for everyone to pull together and work together to achieve that goal if they all have slightly different ideas of what that goal is. And I find that's true, not the space program or the aeronautical program only, but every program can benefit by asking themselves that simple question: what is it we're trying to do? And if they can achieve that, find that answer in one sentence and all agree to it, then they'll have very little difficulty in working together, and that's really the big advantage.
Do you think that a major social problem such as housing and poverty and pollution can be narrowed down to that nice single-minded approach, which makes it real easy for a good engineer?
I would certainly hope that they'd try. I think it is the approach to the problem that'll work. Now, I agree that in many cases you'll have a great deal of difficulty establishing that single thing that you really want to do, but it's worth the effort. And I think of many of our social problems would attempt to do that, identify that single goal that they really want to achieve, then that will allow them to focus their efforts and not go off on side paths and finally disperse the effort to the point where no goals are achieved.
Neil, we have about a minute left. Ev, one more quick question here.
You've touched on this in some indirect ways, but looking back a year ago, are your hopes for eventual world peace any greater now than they were, say, at the time that you took off for the moon?
Well, my hopes are still strong. It's not clear that today's view of the world would lend any particular encouragement toward the improvement of mankind's general level, such with the hope that he'll eventually raise himself above warlike postures. But I don't think that just looking at today's world is enough to answer that question. We rather have to ask ourselves what major things are going to happen between, say, now and the end of this millennium, and what can we do to over that period of time to raise the human race above these activities which we all deplore.
Neil, thank you very much for taking time off from a busy schedule and being with us today, and looking back a year ago and looking forward on where we hope we're going in space and in our society in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, astronaut Neil Armstrong. Also, thanks to Ev Clark of Newsweek magazine, Ross Mark, of the London Daily Express and John Lennon of the Washington Star. This is Rhett Turner.
You have been listening to Press Conference USA, broadcast by the Voice of America. Join us next week at this time for another unrehearsed discussion on Press Conference USA.